Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Overreaction. That's the nothing personal word of the day. It is Thursday, March 7th, 2024, and we are right in the sweet spot of baseball overreaction. And overreaction is not just for baseball. Every sport has it. Everybody has it in their lives. All of us overreact to certain things, either negatively or positively, because we don't take the time to understand the circumstance of the situation that we're evaluating. We tend to love confirmation bias. I knew this would be a bad trip, and then all of a sudden one bad thing happens. This is the worst trip I've ever been on. I knew this would be a bad show. Sort of bored with 2 seconds, but yeah, this show sucks. Overreaction in sports is really hard to avoid because it leads to bad evaluation of your assets, both positively and negatively. Overreaction can be countered by rationality. But there are certain times of year when overreaction is unable to be masked because fans and owners are aligned. It doesn't always happen this way. Spring training is a perfect example where everyone has just been missing baseball for a while. They're happy that the box scores are back. The media is happy to be tweeting stuff every day. They're happy to get sound from managers, et cetera. And they're back. But then something happens. So let's just talk about Carlos Rodon with the Yankees. He gives up a couple home runs. And all of a sudden we need, quote, Aaron Boone is forced to talk about whether or not he had a good fastball. And then Carlos has interviewed himself and said, oh, my velo wasn't what I wanted. It's one of those days. Boone says he didn't have great life on his fastball today. Everyone's got to answer for the fact that he gave up a couple runs in a spring training start, made worse by his performance last year. But if you've had bad performance last year and a good performance in spring training, people react saying you're cured, can't wait for the season. When you've had a great season last year and you get rocked in a spring training outing, it's only spring training, doesn't really much matter. Or if you've had a good season last year and then you get rocked twice or are batting 077, yeah, he's getting in his rhythm. But if Stanton has a bad year last year with low average and hits 077 in spring right now, everybody in Yankee land is saying that's it, Stanton's finished. But what you may not know about Stanton in spring training, as an example, is Stanton does not care about his batting average in spring training. He is often just looking at pitches. He's often swinging, not swinging, only going to an at-bat saying, I will only swing at a breaking ball. Often pitchers are approaching hitters in a way that says, I'm not going to approach the hitter the way I would in a regular season, doing like a Bill Belichick preseason setup when the Patriots would play a team. But very often a pitcher says, I'm going to only throw my breaking ball today, no matter if it's a breaking ball hitter or if it's a fastball count, which doesn't exist as much anymore. But let's just say a 2-0 fastball count or a 3-1 fastball count, I'm going to purposely only throw spin stuff. Or I'm going to do a changeup because I'm doing a little feel on the changeup. Oh, I gave up 8 runs. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I was working on my changeup. So what's not released to you is what's going on inside the team where the plan is already given to the player and discussed with the player prior to the game even happening. It's why I'm telling you, I would never bet on spring training games. A, you never know who's going to play how much when. You never know. And B, you don't know whether or not these teams care about winning the particular game. I would argue we never cared once about winning a spring training game. Even the year we won the Grapefruit League, it just was happenstance. We were much more focused on the individual player doing what they were supposed to do that particular day, that particular at-bat. And it's not worth it to get excited or overreact to Juan Soto's spring going to another Yankee, where he's hitting 690, I think, with a slugging percentage of 690 and an on-base of 690, and I believe his OPS is 6,900. Whatever the case is, do you know for sure off which pitchers he's doing this? Have you seen the analysis of whether or not the pitchers he's faced have been actually trying to get him out? And I'm not trying to impugn Juan Soto's spring. I'm merely trying to get you smarter so you're not one of those people who says Juan Soto's going to win the National League MVP because he is locked in. It's literally the silliest thing you could ever say. Slightly only. I said National League, I meant American League MVP. Of course, he cannot win the... I shouldn't say he won't win the National League MVP. What if the Yankees trade him back to the Nationals in April? Then he could. One of the great overreactions people are having is with your new decade-long pitcher in Los Angeles, Yamamoto. He had a bad outing. Bad outing. What is... like, so what? Gave up some runs, gave up some walks. He then, through his interpreter, met the media and said, hey, too many balls and walks. But one good thing was I could try what I wanted to try. I was testing a couple things. Love that. Because it's true. So I have a suggestion for all of you when it comes to overreaction and when it comes to looking at box scores and studying them and reading the tweets of your favorite writers and all the articles in your favorite papers and listening to your managers. And what they're all saying, the regular season starts in 13 days. 3 weeks from today for 28 teams, but 13 days for the Dodgers and Padres. I would say that that's when you should start looking at box scores. And even then, there are tremendous overreactions. Let's take the batting champion last year, Arias, for the Marlins. No way to do this now, Coca, but I will bet you a dollar that he had a 10-game string at some point during the season, some 10-game string where he was hitting 270. Some players start off hitting really well, and you're going to see them hitting 400 and think, wow. Some players can't get a hit the first week of the season. They're hitting 069, and you're going to think, wow. So this concept of overreaction, we're just starting. But please, don't do it. Don't be a part of it. It's not worth it. One other baseball note I want to mention for all of you people who can't stand Bob Nutting. The number of emails I get for people who don't like the Pittsburgh Pirates and their ownership makes me smile. Only in that it's okay. They've got some really good young players. How about their pitcher, the first pick in the 23 draft? I think he threw a pitch. He's like Sid Finch. His name is Paul Skeens. He is going to be or is the best starter for Pittsburgh. He could end up being a Josh Beckett, Jose Fernandez type starter, just a quality pre-arbitration of Tim Lincecum, where before he even gets to arbitration, he's an MVP Cy Young candidate. The Pirates announced, strangely, that he was not going to make the major league roster. The old cynical Samson is calling up my client, Paul Skeens, and saying, hey, do me a favor. Just say you got a little twinge, a little something, something in your elbow, a little shoulder. How about a little hammy? Oy, my back hurts. They already said that they're putting him down in AAA to work on stuff. But if he has a little injury, he can keep pitching, but do it on the major league injured list. It's why you never publicly announce or even privately in the clubhouse. You never tell anyone what your minor league moves are, who you're optioning. Because A, you've got moles who will talk to the coaches and then talk to the players. So the player then could feign injury to keep service time and keep getting major league pay. Or there's no war. It's just that. So that's why we never would tell anyone what our plans are. And Ben Cherington not only told his team, he went public. Forget privately telling people who we would never do. Can you imagine meeting the media? Hey, about a week from yesterday, we plan on optioning John Cocktosten down to the minor leagues. You have to be moronic to do that. I don't know why Ben actually thought to do it. There must be a reason. Can't think of it. Service time manipulation. That could be the reason. But you remember the rule that if he finishes top in Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, he'll get the full service year anyway. If he starts on the injured list, that would be quite something, wouldn't it? We got to be better at that. When Nick Saban resigned, I spent quite a bit of time thinking about this and talking about this both on Nothing Personal and I think on Lebatard, where I didn't think he was resigning because he was tired of coaching. I didn't think he was resigning because Nick Saban wanted to leave Alabama or didn't love feeling like the god that he was. No matter what media job he takes, he will never have the general genuflecting that he got on campus at Alabama, where he could part the Red Sea almost literally. I don't know why he chose to talk about this more yesterday, but he confirmed all of the speculation that many of us, including me, had about why he left, almost as a protest to where college sports is going. And I thought that that was the reason. And I thought when he was talking to the media and released sort of almost like a statement of why he left, I thought that I was right until I read carefully what he said. And there's so much misunderstanding going on out there that I want to clarify it for you. He was despondent about his own team. It was not about the state of college football. If you read between the lines, he says, I thought we could have had a hell of a team next year, but maybe 70 or 80% of the players you talk to, all they want to know is, am I going to play? Should I transfer? And how much are you going to pay me? And Nick Saban was looking at those players and saying, no one's ever asked me those questions before. What are you talking about? We're about the team. You're on Alabama, my friend. You're playing for Nick Saban. He felt as though that Alabama wasn't working anymore because the goals for these players was about money. Shocking. He claims that Alabama had all the great success because in previous years, Alabama was all about Nick, all about doing what's best for Nick, best for the program. No one cared about their individual selves. Now with NIL, all of a sudden they get to care about themselves as though he had a full team of selfless players. And it makes me smile because the odds of Alabama having a full team of selfless players throughout the years that they were good. Don't forget last year, Nick made it all the way to the semis in the CFP and then lost to Michigan in overtime. Michigan went on to win the championship and Harbaugh left. So two of the final four teams, their coaches left, at least two, Harbaugh and Saban. Coca, that's Q for, did the Washington coach leave too? The Washington coach took over Alabama. So I guess three of the teams left. But I'm talking about leaving college totally. Just Harbaugh and Saban, right? So two of four, but three of four will have coaching changes. Interesting. Well, next year there'll be 14, so it won't matter. Or 12 or 8. I can't even remember how many playoff teams there will be next year because they keep changing. Although maybe in 25 it's 12 or up to 14, 16, 18. But I want to get back to Saban. Do you think for one hot second that the Alabama players are different today than they were yesterday? I was thinking about what he was trying to sell me. Nick Saban can sell. It's what he does. When he drops his helicopter on a high school field, you are buying into what it is to be with Nick Saban. Coincidentally, he happened to be in Alabama, but it doesn't matter. Wherever he'd be coaching, he's selling himself. The way he used to recruit, it used to be enough. What a blow to an ego when you used to be the reason why people would do X or Y And then all of a sudden you realize that, hey, when money's involved, it's no longer about me. And it seems like Nick Saban feels badly for himself. And he wanted to be very clear about why he made the move he did. And I wonder whether I'm buying it. Am I buying that he just had the epiphany that these Alabama players had changed and that college was changing? Has he not noticed a change in the kids over the 20 years he's been coaching or 30 years he's been coaching? That's like asking a teacher whether or not they've noticed a difference in students from 1990 to 2020. Of course, it's completely different. Have you ever wondered why there's older coaches and why Popovich is such an outlier in the NBA and Kerr to a much lesser degree, Thibs to a much lesser degree, but the ability to change with the times or to relate to kids? Side note, Coke, I got a story for you. When Don Mattingly was our manager, Don Mattingly was a great player for the Yankees, a surefire Hall of Famer who did not make it because his career got cut short by back injuries. And I remember when I interviewed him and we hired him and I was getting to know him. And as the years passed that I was with him, I would spend more and more time talking to him about relating to players. So the background of this, and this is not a look at me, Louie, but this is just a part of my life. I was lucky enough to know Red Holzman, the former coach of the Knicks. I was lucky enough that Ernie Grunfeld, the former GM of the Wizards and the Bucks, taught me how to shoot free throws. I was lucky enough to be around basketball. I was lucky enough as president of the Marlins to get to know Pat Riley, the president of the Heat. And one thing that we talked about often, that whole group, whether it was with Red Holzman when he was alive and then moving on to Pat Riley. Red Holzman was the coach for the 73 championship Knicks. Dave DeBuscher, Bill Bradley, Willis Reed, Clyde Frazier, Earl Monroe. Phil Jackson, ironically. Phil Jackson is another example of this. How do you come to grips when it used to be about respect? It used to be during the timeout, the coach was listened to. It used to be the coach commanded the room. It used to be the focus was solely on the court. It used to be you shared a room on the road while traveling commercially. And then somehow progress, quote unquote, didn't just come in the form of salary. It came in the form of benefits. And then it came in the form of distractions. And this isn't just for professional athletes. It's for students. It's for people in the workforce. This is a seminal change that's happening in the world. And either you can deal with the change or you can't. So I would sit with Red Holzman and he'd talk about the days of old and couldn't understand how players acted today and how selfishly they acted. Pat Riley and I would talk about members of the Miami Heat, members of the New York Knicks, and how if they had been playing under Red Holzman, they never would have been able to do the things they did or get away with the things they got away with. How Red Holzman would be turning over in his grave, an unfortunate metaphor, if he had to coach players like this. And so I've always been very thoughtful of the change of players, students, people, adults. And so Don Mattingly and I were talking about it one day, and I said, Don, how do you deal with players who are so selfish now, who don't care about the team winning? We could lose 100 games if they can get an extra 100 grand in arbitration by hitting an extra home run and not caring if they strike out because they don't get a demerit for striking out in arbitration. How do you get them to move the runner over? And Mattingly looked at me and said, I don't. And I said, Don, but that's the way the game is supposed to be played. And I'll never forget this. He said, no, that's the way the game used to be played. It's a different game now. The players are different. Their goals are different. The way they act is different. And if you're asking me why I love being around them, why I love managing them, why he's still the top hitting coordinator for the Blue Jays right now, after the Marlins let him go to hire Skippy, he said, because every once in a while, I still reach one of the kids. I found that to be inspiring, almost teacher-like, when you know you're not going to get everyone in the class, but you get a player once in a while to do the right thing once in a while. So when you read about Nick Saban and the fact that he had to focus more on what the locker room looked like in Alabama, trying to compete the way Mark Cuban gave away game consoles to all of his players and said, we will have the most comfortable locker room ever. Nick Saban, why? Why does he have to put up with that? So he chose to walk away. And that makes him the rule, not the exception. The exception are the Popoviches and the Mattinglys, who are able to adjust to life as is, kids as is, and still thrive in that scenario. Saban couldn't do it. Alabama's lucky, in fact, that he left. All right, before we go to break, do me this one favor to the audience out there listening or watching on David Sampson, the YouTube Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel, or if you're listening wherever you get your podcasts, I have a question. Find me today. Just go around in your ordinary day today and find one person who you cannot relate to and relate to that person. Just one person. Believe me, it'll take you 5 minutes. It could happen at the store getting your coffee. It can happen anywhere where you look at someone and say, my God, they have tattoos on their face, as an example. Or, oh my God, they pierce their noogies. Just relate to someone you wouldn't normally relate to. It's good for you. All right, we come back. Today is my favorite day. We are Oscar week. I should be reviewing only Oscar movies. The good news is that it just so happens that I'm going to be reviewing Sound of Metal, which is number 37 on my top 100, because today's Thursday. And for 100 Thursdays, we're going to be reviewing my entire top 100 list. When we come back, we're going to do that. And then we're going to talk about what's going on in Chicago. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Nothing Personal. Thank you. As we head into March, let's keep the streak going. You have all made us achieve record numbers every single month. It's really, I think there's no end in sight. Coca gets nervous. I think we're just going to keep growing. Spread the word, Nothing Personal with David Sampson. We have our own website, davidsampsonpodcast.com. We have merch. Someone sent a cool idea for the 4869, Coca. Can we put this on where in the diamond, it's 4869, like at second base, first and third, and then home plate is the MPDS logo for 4869. That's a good one. You don't have the right to it, whoever gave me that idea. We're stealing it. No, I'm just kidding. We're not stealing it. We already had it under construction. No, we didn't. I have no way to prove that. It was a great idea. We may use it. We may tweak it a little bit so you have no cause of action against me. Not that I'm giving you any ideas. Did you hear that? Did the microphone just pick that up, Coca? Did you just hear my stomach? Okay. Sound of Metal. Riz Ahmed. Oscar winner. Sound. Oscar winner. Editing. Can you imagine being a drummer? And we've reviewed this on Nothing Personal before. But can you imagine being a drummer and all of a sudden losing your hearing completely? And then figuring out that all you do is drum and you can't drum anymore. How do you come to grips with that? What sort of therapy is required? What sort of rage will occur? Riz Ahmed gives a performance that was Oscar worthy, nominated, did not win. The movie itself, nominated Best Picture, did not win. It still won a couple of Oscars. What I loved about it, and it won Best Sound as well. What I love most about this movie and why it's in my top 37 is number 37, the performance by Riz Ahmed. And I've always been Children of a Lesser God, Coda, Sound of Metal. There's something about movies where there are people who are hearing impaired and how they adjust to the world, much like visually impaired or physically challenged. I am constantly fascinated. And that's maybe why I'm on the board of Challenged Athletes Foundation. I'm constantly fascinated by people who are able to compensate in ways that I can't dream about. And I question if I had to, would I be able to? It's that view of someone who does something, not because they're more skilled. I don't have awe when a 7-footer can dunk. or when LeBron James is so good at basketball and I'm not. I'm talking about the people who have challenges, significant challenges, visual, hearing, physical. And yet, not only do they compensate, but they thrive. Go watch Sound of Metal and you will be extremely impressed with the movie, with the quality of the movie, and with the performances. And you will not wonder why it's number 37 on my list. All right. Thank you again to our fan and listener who created the random number generator. Coca is going to put it on the screen right now if you're watching on the YouTube channel. And we are going to come up with our movie to review next Thursday. Let me put on my 1.5ers. I didn't switch these glasses yet, so I can't really see. All right, Coca, hit the button. Hey, it's your number one movie. What are the odds of that? Number 38 on the list, my list, is Gladiator. I have not watched Gladiator in too long. Not today. Not today. Coca, will you watch Gladiator again this week, if you don't mind? Next week, we're going to review Gladiator. Coca's number one overall. My number 38. That is a great, great random generator. So it's Oscar week coming up. I've got my pool right here, ready to be filled out. I have one more movie to finish up, and then I've seen everything. And I wanted to talk about this. I'm going on Levitard today at 9:25 Eastern. That'll be part of the first hour, the hours that's on Max. Adnan and I, or on Levitard's YouTube channel, live at 9. Adnan Virk and I and Ben Lyons are doing a 7-hour Oscar show called Live from the Stained Carpet. We're going to Miami, and you'll notice tomorrow's show, I will be in the Miami studio, in Metalark Studio in Miami, doing Nothing Personal live at 8 a.m., of course, but then doing Levitard show tomorrow as well, all promoting this watch party that we're doing. And look for a contest on levitardaf.com where you can fill out a ballot. And what you won't see on levitardaf.com is that the winner, we're going to do a bracket pool, a ballot pool. If you win, you're going to get a prize. But I'm going to take everybody, and I'm announcing this right now, and I'm going to announce it on the show tomorrow, but you're all hearing this first. Anyone who beats me is going to get put into a pool, and someone, I will draw a name, and someone will get a special prize for me, and it's going to be cool. It may involve merch. It may involve memorabilia. But anyone who beats me will get into that drawing. So you got to go on levitardaf.com. It's not live yet. This is being announced here within an hour. So if you're listening to this in the afternoon, go to levitardaf.com right now, where you will find a ballot, an Oscar ballot. Fill it out, and you are in the contest. Live from the Stained Carpet. Okay, Nothing Personal pick of the day. We had the Kings plus 3.5 at Lakers. Why were people nervous about that? I got a bunch of people, Coca, coming in my DMs concerned that why would I go against such a hot team like the Lakers? That is a bad pick. I'm going against you. Well, there you go. You shouldn't have. Kings plus 3.5 is a winner. We are 30-31. We didn't even need the 3.5. The Kings won the game outright by 10 points. All right, pay attention. We have two plays today. Today's Thursday. Big game, Nuggets Celtics. We are taking the Nuggets, giving 1.5 to the Celtics. That may sound crazy to you. Celtics are the best team. Well, I think the Nuggets are the co-best team. And until someone takes the championship away from Jokic, I still think the Nuggets are the best team. Well, maybe co-best team. We're giving 1.5. Nuggets minus 1.5 versus the Celtics. And then we have a special second bet. We're doing a half a unit. So take your unit, cut it in half. Half a unit on a money line parlay with the Nuggets and the Heat. I want to explain the Heat pick. And the reason I want to explain it to you is there's something weird going on with the Heat, and I can't fully explain it because for whatever reason, they just start winning when they need to and then get hot heading into the playoffs. And we're in the, you know, the last quarter of the season. They're going into Dallas right now, and you know I've been very, very on Dallas with Luka winning the title before Trae Young and a mea culpa that Luka and Kyrie have been a great pair. The Mavericks are giving 4.5 to the Heat tonight in Dallas. I'm going to put the Heat on the money line with the Nuggets, and a half unit pays plus 384. This is a long shot parlay, assuming the Celtics and Mavericks both lose, but we're doing it. Okay. Did you see what's going on in Chicago? Let me introduce what it is and then tell you my experience with this. We told you about the White Sox trying to get a new ballpark. We've told you about the Bears trying to get a new ballpark. Now, the White Sox and the Bears, who were competing for the same tax revenue in Chicago to help finance their respective new stadiums in Chicago, have come up with a brilliant plan. And the brilliant plan is that they're going to work together. Kumbaya, my Lord. Kumbaya. Let's go raise money together. Hold my hand. They think they're going to go together to the public, hand in hand, and say, build me two stadiums right now. There's a lot of cities that have seen this play before in the playbook. A lot of teams try to do it. There's two ways when you're a team in a city. Here's the Marlins way. You did it for them, now do it for us. Hey, if you do it for us, we're the ones who may be leaving. Worry about them later. We're now. That's one approach. Second approach. I understand why you have to take care of them, but once you do, it's going to be our turn. Take care of us. It's another approach. I don't like that. It's a little meeker, a little more meek. How about this last one? Hey there. You know, they need renovations and we need a new facility. Why don't we just do it all at the same time? I think that'd be amazing. Hey there. They need a new stadium. We need a new ballpark. Two for one. Look at the economies of scale. We can hire the same rebar guy. Everyone will pour the concrete at the same time. Imagine the extra work that the workers are getting. Side note, it's not incremental. How does it work in real life? First, the White Sox and the Bears have to come to an agreement with what they need and what stream of revenue is going to provide them what they need. Do you think the White Sox will say, hey, public entity, finance the Bears 70%, finance us 30%, no problem. We're good with that. Are you kidding me? What's good for the goose is going to have to be good for the bear. So it turns out that if you go together hand in hand with a team, there is an amazing amount of competition. There's an amazing amount of looking over your shoulder saying, wait a minute, look what they're getting. Look at the going forward operating deal they're getting. Look at the upfront financing they're getting. Look at the favorable terms. Look at this contract. Look at that. The public entity would then be forced to give most favored nation status, which is, those are in contracts. I think I talked about it with Skipper on a sporting class. When you offer to sell something to someone and you say, you see this in stores all the time, we will match whatever price you bring us that's legitimate from another store. If you can find this movie for $9.99 anywhere else, we will sell it for $9.99, but our price is $11.99. People do that in the cable world. People do that in the retail world. Hey, we'll beat it. I'm Crazy Eddie, that type of thing. I used to sound like Crazy Eddie doing these shows, Coco, when we first started, screaming into the microphone like some whirling dervish, some lunatic. But when two teams are going at it together, you don't think that they both would have most favored nation status? Because you think the White Sox would be fine with the Bears getting a better deal, or the Bears would be fine with the White Sox getting a better deal, a higher percentage, a different allocation? Now, it turns out that what the Bears and White Sox are both trying to do, and believe me, they're trying. It's not working, but they're trying. They're trying to say, hey, this is an existing revenue stream. That's all we got to do. Let's just allocate it. Let's do a financing partnership. And do you know who the spokesperson is for this gig? It's the developer. If you've heard of Related, Related in Miami, that's George Perez, Steve Ross, the owner of the Dolphins. Related in New York, Hudson Yards, Related, that's Stephen Ross. There's a Related Midwest. There's Related everywhere. You may live in a Related building right now. So they're working with the White Sox, and they gave an interview to the Chicago Sun-Times and said that they're trying to figure out a financing partnership with the teams that will link the projects, and then gave a quote. This is Kurt Bailey. I'm calling you out, Kurt, the president of Related Midwest. Wouldn't it be unbelievable for our city if you were to see two amazing facilities for these great sports teams built at once? That's a great play in the playbook. You always put it out there to the politicians and the citizens. Wouldn't it be great, Nick Kershaw style, wouldn't it be good if all of this happened coincidentally to our benefit? Well, I've got a surprise for you, Chicago Bears and Chicago White Sox. NGTH, not going to happen. It is way too complicated. There's too many egos involved. And when you're negotiating with the public sector, when you make things more complicated, it leads to delays. And there's one thing that Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't want right now. It's delays. Now, if you're the public entity and you say to Reinsdorf, there's no way, you better play nicely with the Bears because there's no way. Here's how it really should work. If the public is trying to get the best deal possible for its citizens, you put one deal on the table and you say, listen, Bears and White Sox, jump ball, sign this contract, and you get the deal. To the other one of you, sorry. It's what Fox did with us in the Tampa Bay Rays doing TV deals. Hey, we got one amount of money to go to one of you. If you want to do the extension in Tampa, great. Sorry, Florida. If you want to do it, great, Florida. Congrats. Sorry, Tampa. This is a very common way to negotiate. Do you think that the public entity will say, all right, let's all meet together. We're going to sit in a square table or a round table. It could be a diagonal table if you'd like. And then we're going to talk about the fact that we're going to allocate all these billions of dollars to each of you because there's no other better thing we can do with the money. Citizens, don't recall me. It's not what's going to happen. I believe that the politicians in Chicago will be smart enough to do separate deals. As a matter of fact, I believe it so much that I'm going to make it an actual wait to see. Wait to see. You know, we revisit them. Yesterday, we had a wait to see that got solved. Coke, I can't remember what it was, but we were a yes. It was, I can't hear. Verlander. It was Verlander starting the season on the IL. Thank you, Coca. Well, we have a wait to see that we're going to put out there in the universe. You can see all of the wait to sees on davidsampsonpodcast.com. In addition to previous shows and merch, we also have a tracking document. You have every pick of the day, every wait to see, every movie I've ever reviewed. My top 100 list is there as well. Wait to see. The White Sox and Bears will do separate deals. They will not do a deal together. Wait to see. And this is becoming big in other cities as well. They're doing this in Kansas City now with the Chiefs and the Royals. They're trying to figure out a way to get the Royals a new stadium. They're trying to get a way for Arrowhead to get renovated. They have the Super Bowl champion Chiefs. It is not true that stadium financing deals just happen at the snap of a finger if you win a Super Bowl or World Series. Not true. They did something yesterday in Kansas City that caught my attention, or 2 days ago. I wanted to bring it up. Let me bring it up, Coke. I'm getting better. They took their players and they used their current day players to make a commercial to try to get fans to vote a certain way to extend a sales tax. So they used players. I'm going to talk about whether I agree with that, but I want to mention that using players, the concept, why do we do it? I sat around from 2002 to 2009 when we started construction of Marlins Park. I was trying to get a financing deal done, and current players and alumni players were always a big part of my playbook. And the reason they were is that politicians, at the end of the day, local politicians, they're just fans like you and I are. When an athlete walks into their office, they're wowed. They're seduced. They want signed stuff. I'm not saying that we gave signed stuff in return for yes votes. I'm not saying we did anything unsavory or nefarious. Not for lack of looking by Braman at all. What I am saying is that when you walk around with athletes, it's sort of like walking around with the prom queen while going to Walgreens. People are looking like, wow, you must be cool. Think Dudley Moore and Susan Anton. That may be a reference totally lost on everyone. Think David Sampson and Bo Derek. Is that lost on everyone? All right, let me try this. Think Matthew Coca and Anna de Armas. How about that? Oh, Coca, you know I'm just kidding. Oh my God, I think he's going to cut the stream off right now. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying people would look and say, huh? Or they'd look and say, wow, Matthew, what do you want? I'm happy to do an episode of Nothing Personal because I get to meet Anna de Armas. So when you bring players around, it does nothing but help. They don't negotiate stadium deals. They don't have any interest in doing that. And when you go to players and ask them to do stuff, sometimes they say no. The best chance you have is players who are invested in the community. When we would go to Mike Lowell and Jeff Conine, they would say yes way more than Miguel Cabrera. And the reason they would say yes is they were Miamians. They lived in Miami. So we would bring them up to Tallahassee. We'd bring them down to the county. We'd bring them to meet politicians when they would go to games, paying for their own tickets, of course. All of which is meant to say that using athletes, both alums and current day, is the smartest thing you can do when you're doing any sort of deal. So Kansas City Royals and Chiefs are doing a commercial. Who would you want in a 15-second commercial where what you're trying to do is tell the people of Kansas City that sales tax that you spend when you buy stuff that could sunset and make sure and your taxes could go down? We want to extend it for 40 more years. So you keep paying what you've been paying. What we promised would sunset, we want to extend it 40 more years. Tell me, Jackson County, are you in or out? My name is Clark Hunt. Out. All right, let me try this one. My name is Travis Kelce. My friend Patrick Mahomes and I would like you to consider extending the sales tax by 40 years. Really? Will I get to meet Taylor? I'm in. What's ironic is that Salvador Perez appeared for the Royals. Bobby Witt, who just got $300 million. It's always good when you sign a really big contract, a big contract. We couldn't get Stanton to do much, but he did enough when he signed that big deal. But we were very focused. We had Andre Dawson, Tony Perez, and Jeff Conine, and we had Juan Pierre, and all sorts of, we had the ability to bring World Series winning players into meetings and meet people, and they had the awe factor. They had, you know, the Gail Godot factor. But the current day Chiefs and the current day Royals, I guess they couldn't get any alums, but who would you get as a Chiefs alum? But as a Royals alum, you could maybe get Eric Hosmer, who's retired. But this is funny that the athletes do this. Why are they agreeing? Why do they? When they're not part of the community going forward. And the reason is they must love their owner. Clark Hunt, in that recent survey, he finished ahead of one other guy. How great is that? He was only the 31st ranked owner out of 32. No wonder Kelce and Mahomes are jumping all over themselves to help them get a renovate a new stadium. I totally get that. You know what's funny? All the Oakland A's stuff that's happening and the new stadium in Vegas that I go listen to the show yesterday. Every day those renderings are out. People are poking more holes in them. They're just absurd. But have you noticed any former Oakland A's players, alums, or current Oakland A's players as part of this Vegas move? I have not seen any. I could be wrong, but famous Oakland A's. I wonder whether Tony La Russa is making any appearances in Vegas, former manager of the A's. What about Ricky Henderson? Did they get him? Jose Canseco, maybe. Mark McGwire. I wonder whether they are spending time trying to get this deal done in Vegas. I haven't quite seen that. I mean, I assume they are. I mean, why wouldn't they? Oh, because it's not happening? We actually have players ask us when we would have them do something. Hey, what's the likelihood when we drag them to Tallahassee? Do you think we're going to get state money? And I would always be honest with the players. No, unlikely. But hey, we got to try. For this Kansas City extension of the sales tax, when Travis Kelce says, hey, do you want Taylor to tweet something to the voters of Jackson County? Well, hell yes, I do. Do you think it's going to pass? I would tell Kelce and I would tell Mahomes if I were the president of the Chiefs or the Royals, yeah, it's going to pass. People have a tendency when things are not an increase, but they're a continuation, to feel as though it's no problem. They don't realize that when you're continuing something that was going to stop, when it does continue, that's then an increase from where it would have been had it stopped. But the mentality of people, it's sort of like, oh, we pay that anyway. We're used to paying that anyway. It's such a brilliant strategy. Kansas City is going to get what it wants. I promise you that. Why? It's just business. Good luck, everybody in Chicago and Kansas City. This is nothing personal.